magical kingdom in a mixed up world. You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world.
Welcome to the Sweet Spot Podcast. My name is Lynn, your host, and Ken's my co-host. Ken, how's it going?
Oh, Lynn, it is going. It is going. I'm so happy to be here. Looking forward to another great episode of the Sweet Spot Podcast.
That's right. Ken and I are both former Disneyland custodial cast members, and we host the number one Disneyland podcast hosted by two former Disneyland custodial cast members.
Number one. And we are the leading candidates to be the next chief financial officer for Disney and the chief diversity officer for Disney.
I wish. well, at least one of those. This is episode 362.
What?
Yes.
That is impressive, Lynn. That is absolutely impressive. Doesn't feel like 362, but here we are.
So, you know, I was think, okay. So anyways, I was going to tell something, but I'm not. So
what a tease.
Yeah, no, but I was thinking about it, 362. And then I've heard some other podcasts that have not been around as long as we have. And they're catching up. So the thing is, we don't number the current event shows that we put out. And so technically we're probably more than 400.
Yeah. Since we split the current events from the main topic, you know, that's folks, this is going to be a main topic episode.
It is.
And alternate weeks, we do the current events at the Disneyland Resort so that you can catch up on what's happening, you know, in the last couple of weeks. So we put one of those out last week, or actually just a few days ago. And we're going to put another one out in a little over a week. So subscribe, like at Apple Podcasts, for example. Follow, subscribe, like us, you know, so that you never miss an episode.
That's right. Also, we're the authors of Queening the Kingdom books. And you can get signed copies on our website, thesweetspot.com. Or you can go to Amazon and get non-signed copies. You can also get digital copies. Like on Kindle and digital books. You can also get the audiobooks on Audible and where audiobooks are found for both volumes of our books. Also, I wanted to mention that I am co-hosting the DL Weekly on a temporary basis for the next month and so, month and a half or so. So you can go over to the DL Weekly and check, listen to more of me ramble on with Teresa. And also, I'm going to be in Disneyland. So if you're early downloader, I'm going to be in there on the 29th of June and July 1st. So if you want to contact me through social media or somehow you happen to see me, I will have buttons to give out to you. So hope to see you there. Also, I wanted to mention, we keep mentioning this, and I think it's important that our good friend Jim Corcus, who we've had on the show many times, one of our most popular guests that we've had, he has had some major medical issues come about, and he's been in the hospital for quite a while. And that's racking up a lot of money and bills, and he could definitely use your help. And so if you go to some of our show notes and look for the Jim Corcus, or you can go to GoFundMe and search Jim Corcus, I'm sure you can find it. It's been all over social media too. So if you can give even a dollar, you know, it would really help him out. Or if you want buy some of his books on Amazon, I know he'd really appreciate that. And that does help him also. Ken, who is our guest tonight?
Well, Lynn, we are welcoming some fellow podcasters. We are going to have Sue and Rod from the Epcotian Adventure podcast. I think the listeners will find this, what they have to say, fascinating.
They're not just podcasters, Ken. Former cast members. Yeah.
They are. Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out. They were contemporaries. I mean, I remember working with Rod, he wasn't in custodial, but you know, he was an attractions cast member on the west side of Disneyland, and he's also worked at Walt Disney World, and Sue also worked the west side in foods. So they've got a lot of great stuff to share with our listeners.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to them. Let's get right into that, in fact. Looking to book a vacation to Disneyland Resort, Walt Disney World Resort, Disney Cruise Line, Disney Alani, Disneyland Paris, Adventures by Disney, Universal Studios Hollywood, Universal Studios Orlando, then I can do that for you. If you contact me and we can talk about all the different options and dates, and we can kind of even make recommendations on which days might be the best for you to go. And also as a complimentary, when you book with us, we will book your dining for you if you'd like, special events. And we also, when we book a vacation for you, we just don't say have a good time after we book it for you. We are there every step of the way. We contact you before your trip to make sure everything's squared away. We even have a checklist to make sure that you have everything you need. Reservations, dining, all these different things. Your transportation, if you need help with that from the airport, any of those sort of things, we can help you with that too. We want to make the vacation the best it can be for you, because I know that vacations aren't cheap, and we can help you do that. So if you contact me, that's Lynn, and the email is lbarron@concierge.com. That's LBARRON at concierge.com. Or you can go to thesweepspot.com, and there's a link on our front page there. You can click on that, and there's information on how to contact me. But I'd love to talk to you and help you book the best vacation possible. So we'll start with Rod first. But Rod, when did you start at Disneyland, and what was your first role?
Well, I started in 1987, and mm-hmm. I started in attractions at New Orleans Bear Country. Yeah, that old. New Orleans NOBC attractions. Pirates of the Caribbean actually was my first attraction. And mm-hmm. within just a few months, I was able to go permanent. So I got temporarily moved over to the Jungle Cruise. Because with Splash Mountain starting build up, they were moving people around trying to find hours for them, and mm-hmm. escalated from there.
Wow, nice. And yeah. Sue, how about you?
I first started at Disneyland in 1992. I did the college program. So I opted to work in foods because I made a whole quarter more than I would have made working in attractions. Oh, yeah. And that goes a long way in the college program. So my first, I was also over in Critter Country. Mm-hmm. So my first role was working at Hungry Bear and at Mile Long Bar, which had just become Brer Bar.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. For a time, I was a lead at Country Bear Jamboree, and Sue was working up at
Hungry Bear.
So I go out there and have lunch and go, "Hey sis, how you doing?"
Cool. Country Bear Jamboree is one of my favorite things growing up.
Yeah, I remember when it opened at Disneyland in 72. I actually remember seeing the construction of it turn from a Indian, I don't want to call it a war camp. It was an Indian circle, like a tribal circle where they did dances and explain things about Native American culture. And I remember seeing that as a kid and then seeing it being torn down. It was distraught. Yeah, until Rufus started snoring at the entrance and I could see the bears.
Right. So sounds like you were everywhere. Well, both of you sound like you kind of moved around. So was that the same thing like West Side Attractions back then?
When it became West Side Attractions really with, I want to say Fantasmic, about 90, 91, they kind of merged the NOCC area, so 956 with Adventure Frontier 951, and it became West Side Attractions, yeah. So scheduling-wise and everything like that, it became available for everybody to work everything in those areas. Which is great. That's how I got to learn Thunder, and I became a lead at Tiki and Tree and Fantasmic Guest Control and all that. Kind of was, I think, one of the main reasons was just trying to find enough cast members to work Fantasmic GC over the those long hot nights in the summer when they're doing three shows.
We had even a few custodial cast members, you know, our A leads, like one of them, Larry. He deliberately would do that as his second shift. He'd work the day in custodial and then did Fantasmic guest control. And in those days, unlike now, there wasn't common for custodial people to work official guest control spots. But he did it, and he claimed he was doing it to kind of get our foot in the door. Because he says if he could establish that, then others could do the same too.
That makes sense. I mean, back then, I was working in Fantasmic GC as a lead. We would take over the scheduler position for the evening for the West Side as well. So, I mean, we were looking to schedule the next day's Fantasmic and attractions. And we were pulling people from anybody that would want to work. I don't think we cared what department was they had at that point. Because, yeah, it was going to be a full show night with three shows. We were bringing them in through Frontierland from Main Street and exiting out through Adventureland. And just the sheer number of cast members it required to do that was astronomical, the number of man hours that would go nightly into the bucket there.
Right. Well, guest control is something that basically any cast member should be able to do to some extent. You know, because it's always something that you're going to have to get involved with at some point during your shift, you know.
So did you ever work any GC shifts at all? Or
I never did. I had to sort of fight against the crowd just to get from Hungry Bear to back to behind Space Mountain where the locker rooms were. But I never actually was part of guest control. It's just kind of built into say excuse me real loud and point with two fingers. So
yeah, a habit that still sticks with me at this late age. I can't point with a single finger to this day.
No, that one's bred in for sure.
Yeah. Well, just work in there, I think it will do that to you.
Yeah,
that and stopping to take pictures for strangers.
Well,
because of our podcast, we go to Magic Kingdom, Disney World, Epcot, the Disney World parks all the time, and we still manage to get out to land. It doesn't matter. We're walking around. We obviously are not cast members. I've got a full beard half the time.
It doesn't matter anymore.
That's right. I guess that's not a thing anymore. And people will go, oh, good. Here, can you take our picture? Do I just smell like a cast member?
It's the microchip gets activated and they can tell that we were cast members.
No, people know. I mean, it's some sort of invisible aura. I was standing in front of the American Adventure one time at the old Epcot Center, and this is before pen trading, you know, and I was like, I had buttons all over me. You know, and someone came up and said, you work here, right? Yeah, no, man. But I might be able to answer your question. You know?
Yeah, after quite a few years, about 9 years in attractions, I transferred out to Magic Kingdom and worked out there in East Attractions for a while. And what you were saying about guest control should be open to anybody. I actually opened up the west side of Magic Kingdom to the East Siders. I called over just looking for some hours because, you know, I'm not getting a lot at that point. And they said, well, nobody's really ever asked us before. Sure, we'll put you at Pirates for the day. And they literally had me stand out and do guest control at Pirates in Florida for the day. So I've actually been a pirate on both those. And just to push the envelope, I asked them again one time. They said, sure, they can use you at Splash for the day. So I actually got to work Splash on both coasts.
What was one of your attractions, Rod, that you enjoyed working the best, the most?
Sorry about that. I had to take the collar off my dog. She was making noise. Oh, heavens. Pirates has still got a soft spot in my heart because it was my first attraction. I still, if you know how people say they count sheep to go to sleep at night?
Yeah.
I load pirate boats in my head. And I know that when I look over and see people coming up both lines and I start double grouping from two lines, that's how I know I'm asleep. So Pirates is still a huge part of my psyche. But I was elite at Mansion. I opened Splash, came in just after the opening at Indy. Was elite at Tiki and Tree, worked Thunder.
You still have a lot of stories that you tell about bears, too.
So. Yeah, Bear Band was one of my favorite places to work. I was one of the first male cast members over there. Not the first, but one of the first.
Let's hear some stories.
You were there when it snowed?
I was there, yeah. Actually, it's funny. Working at Disneyland for, 16, almost 17 years, I saw, all the usuals, rain, snow, fire, riots, earthquake, all of the normal things you would see at a job working at Disneyland. There was one day I was standing at the turnstiles at Country Bear Jamboree and looked out and sure enough, snowflakes are falling. Okay. Yeah, the end is nigh.
Snowflakes were falling around Splash Mountain then.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, there was snow in Critter Country. There was another time during the construction of something backstage. I don't remember. They had a big cofferdam up backstage and it rained so hard that the dam burst and it flowed. I've lived in the Midwest for too long. Can you tell? It done flowed out from around the gates at Splash into Bear Creek and literally flooded Critter Country right up to the turnstiles at Country Bear Jamboree. It was just one big river all the way into the Rivers of America from there.
Oh, wow.
And of course, it's California. You got earthquake stories galore, but
Oh, well, you know how Country Bear has the two theaters on the West Coast? Well, I know that for a long time they had the Christmas overlay in one that they would keep. Would they just keep that set up, for Christmas?
Initially, when it started in the late 80s, it was in both theaters. And so the whole Bear Band complex would be Country Bear Christmas show. But there would be a time when they would have one theater completed and the other theater not ready, but they let us operate two theaters. So there was a short time every season where we would have two shows actually running at the Country Bear Playhouse.
Oh, that's interesting.
Very unique times when that would happen. We were staffed for it. We would just get on and say, hey, in 7 minutes, the Country Bear Vacation Hoedown will be right here. And the Country Bear Christmas Special will be over here. The bears are just really quick at changing the costumes. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask was that did they actually use both? But I guess you needed. I mean, was there a time where it was so busy? I guess you did need both, right?
There was times when we'd have both theaters running and a queue. It was rare, but it did occur. The Rick D's day was one of those. We had everybody. There's the riot I was talking about.
So were you there? You were there that day?
Oh yeah, I was at Bears, and it was a madhouse. I I heard the stories of what was happening out on Main Street and people at Emporium just throwing stuff out to their friends.
I think I've mentioned it, so I haven't said it to you, so I'll say it to you. I was dating somebody in merchandise at the time, and she was working the Emporium that day, and I had no idea. I mean, this is, you know, before social media and everything. I think I probably had classes that day, and I'm home, you know. She stopped by my apartment, and I go to open my door, and she's standing there shaking.
Oh my.
And I'm like, what's wrong, you know? And you know, I'm like, oh, today was, you know, that thing in the morning, wasn't it, that, you know, yeah, early morning party for, you know. I had to sit her down and get her to like slowly tell me what happened, you know. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, they basically told us if we had an early release that day that it was canceled because there was no way anybody was going to be able to leave the park because they needed manpower, but nobody could leave the park. I mean, that was still when ALOT was a thing before DCA, so there was no way to get out onto Harbor Boulevard or over off West Street. It was just jam-packed with cars all the way around the resort. So they said, even if you're off, stay where you're at or go backstage and just don't even try.
I mean, this is a weekday. I think the original premise was that people could come. You know, the radio station was doing a promotion and people could come to the park in costume before normal operating hours. They could get in free if they were in costume. And then the park would be cleared. You know, people would be given tickets to come back in during normal operating hours. They were supposed to take off their costumes, but the response was just so overwhelming that plan was basically dropped. It was just like the park got flooded with all these people, and you know, it went on and on that day, and people were just misbehaving pretty badly.
That's a nice way to put it. Yeah. there were more cast member assaults that day, I think, than any other day that I'd ever heard about. So so yeah,
wow.
It was absolutely insane that day. The only other thing that was like the complete antithesis of that is when California Adventure opened. I was in merch, working Main Street actually, and worked the stroller shop that morning. They said get here early because it's gonna be so crowded.
Oh yeah.
So I did. I showed up at 5 a.m., sat at the in-between, and had one of the, you know, great cheap breakfasts back when that was a thing for the cast members. And went to the stroller shop, and they're like, well, we need people over at DCA for the opening. Anybody want to go? I'm like, sure, I'll go open a new theme park. Why not? So I went over and helped them at the stroller shop over there, and the initial rush of people came in, and then nothing. It was just crickets. It was sad is what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, you go from way too many people to when they not plan for it to nobody when they do plan for it.
Right. I worked that morning at, I was opening Tomorrowland custodial lead, and they had us come in. Usually we would come in at 5:30, or, you know, I think I came in at 4:30 that day because they, you know, they wanted the anticipation. They said parking would be really bad, and you know, the shuttles would take forever to get into the parks, and so they wanted us to get there really early. And yeah, like you said, then nothing happened. They started early ERing people, and wow.
I mean, once you went in and got to ride Superstar Limo, what else could, I mean, it's only downhill from there.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
They should have had Fast Pass for that. I think they had tens of people waiting for that attraction. Yeah. That's
dozens and dozens.
Oh, at least a dozen. Yeah. My gosh. I still can't believe that was a Disney attraction after all these years. I remember riding that for the cast member premiere, actually. For Sue's birthday, I took her down there to stay at Grand Californian just before park opening to the general public. And yeah, we went in and I hadn't seen the park at all, like, except from the, you know, the outside. And so we get in there, we get the hotel room was overlooking Grizzly. And we look in, this is a beautiful park. And we go in the next morning, and I think we headed pretty much to Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And so Superstar was like one of the first or second attractions we rode. And I think Soarin' was first. Yeah. And then it was Superstar. And it was like, oh my gosh. is Ashton Kutcher here? Are we being punked?
It was like what you couldn't believe was just how much it surpassed Pirates.
Oh yeah. You know. Yeah. And the cast members looked so happy working in that attraction. Even they knew at that point it was doomed.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if my wife had ever done Superstar Limo. I remember I took her on her first ride of Monsters Inc. Mm-hmm. And we came to the exit and she's like, what was that? You know, and I said, well, you have to understand, it's because she's thinking monster, you know, she's thinking of the movie, you know, and all, so just think of what, you know, what an attraction that's built from scratch based on that movie might be like, you know. And she was just like, well, why? You know, and I said, well, because it's the reskinned Superstar Limo. That's why, you know, it wasn't built from the ground up as Monsters Inc., you know. So,
and Monsters Inc. is approximately 1,000 times better than Superstar Limo.
It's still kind of sad though, if you go to Tokyo Disneyland and go on Monsters Inc. Ride and Seek, it's kind of a combination of Monsters Inc. and Buzz Lightyear. You have little flashlights that trigger targets that trigger animation, but unlike Disneyland's version or DCA's version, all the animation works at Tokyo Disneyland, and it's a beautiful attraction out there. Even the queue is just amazing. You walk in through the Monsters Incorporated lobby. Beautiful, beautiful ride. And then I'm not dissing the version that DCA has. It's like Sue said, it's way above what they did have. But
yes,
you know, what they could have had is amazing. Yeah.
For sure.
Also, when you look at Tokyo Disney Sea versus anything else in the world.
Yeah.
I crave going back to that park. It, unlike any other park on the planet.
Yeah, that's it's kind of tough that, you know, Oriental Land Company was able to open up that at the same time the Walt Disney Company was doing DCA 1.0 and Disney Studios Paris.
Yeah. You
know? Oh. And so those parks suffered a lot in comparison. I mean, it's just a good thing that most Americans and most Parisians don't know from firsthand the Tokyo Disney parks, you know.
Well, Disneyland Paris, we spent last Thanksgiving at Disneyland Paris, and we had been before, and the Studios park is finally starting to come into its own a bit now. I mean, before it was, I swear, it was like a bad dream of a Disney park. You walk in through the soundstage, which was very reminiscent of the original, like, Hollywood Land at DCA, where it was looked like just flats of everything. And you walk out the back door and there's no weenie at all. There's nothing to pull you anywhere in the park.
Oh.
And Tower of Terror was new the first time we went. And that one, that's a beautiful version of that
it's
ride.
So good.
But they had Armageddon, which was the kind of the environmental show, kind of like the backdraft, I guess you could call it, of mm-hmm. that park, and Rock and Roller Coaster with no music. So that was fun.
Weird.
Yeah, there was no music. The cars were beyond needing repair. It was painful.
Oh yeah.
It was not good. But Crush's Coaster.
But Crush's Coaster. That's the mm-hmm. one.
I've
the
heard
one saving grace for that entire park is a spinning coaster that is part dark ride, part coaster, and really, really a good fit for a Disney park. Matter of fact, this last edition of the podcast that we did last week, we talked about, you know, we blue skied some new attractions for the parks and some changes. And one of the things we said was put Precious Coaster right outside the Living Seas, or the mm-hmm. Seas with Nemo and Friends now at Epcot. be a perfect addition for that park.
Yeah.
Well, this is you're talking about the turtle coaster.
Yeah. It looks like you're in a turtle shell. Capacity is not great, but the attraction is more fun than it should be.
It's so fun.
Most spinning coasters. I mean, I worked at DCA and attractions for several years as well. I was the lead at Mulholland Madness. And those mouse style coasters are just absolutely horrific on your body. But somehow they made it work for Crush's Coaster, where it's not really a mouse coaster. It's not really a spinning coaster. It's part dark ride, part fun.
Not sure what is it kind of like Sierra Sidewinder at Knott's? Or...
It's similar to that. I think it's the same manufacturer, I believe.
Yeah.
But it's a custom model because it does take you through a dark ride portion prior to the lift. And then after the lift, there's actually some like show scenes that you go through. And it's been a while since I've been on that one, but as I recall, they feel very similar in their spinning capabilities.
Nice.
Yeah, so, better not than, that's been a few years. I kind of miss the SoCal parks. Lived here in the Midwest now for going on 17 years. Is that right?
Something like that, yeah.
That's crazy how fast it goes. 16, so I've 17. Been away from Disney now for that same period.
Well, so why did you move from Disney? Did you go directly from Disneyland to Walt Disney World?
I went from Disneyland to Disney World in 96. And then I moved back to California 6 months later. Growing up in California, you don't get used to the humidity out there. And
the humidity.
I know God has a sense of humor because before I started working at Disneyland, I literally said to my family, I want to work anything here except Pirates of the Caribbean. Those buckles on the shoes look stupid. First attraction was Pirates. Flash forward to late 95, and I'm putting in a transfer to World to work attractions. And I said, I want to work anything here but the Grand Prix Raceway because, look, they're outside in that smog. And that's where I ended up. So I was at the Grand Prix in Tomorrowland for 6 months. Did some guest control all over the park just to try to get some extra hours. And they finally trained me on the arcade, of all things. The Tomorrowland Light and Power Company, which is now the exit for space, basically, in
the Tron gift shop.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
And I put in my resignation, basically, and one of the supervisors was wanted me to ride Space Mountain with her, and just kind of an exit interview, I guess you could say. And as we're waiting in the queue, she's like, you know, it's sad you're leaving. We had you pegged as the next supervisor over here. Like, you tell me this as I'm walking out the door?
Yeah.
I literally was on my way to meet friends in Yellowstone National Park to camp out for a week. I was like, I got everything. Everything I own is in my car.
Wow.
If you told me this even a week ago. Oh, well, you know, best laid plan.
So back in California, you said Haunted Mansion, Pirates, Jungle Cruise, Tiki Room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bears, Canoes.
Bears, right.
Rafts, Thunder, Tiki and Tree. I think that was pretty much it. Fantasmic GC, of course. But
wow.
And then...
did you say Canoes?
Canoes, yeah. Yeah, love the canoe. I was not a river rat. I didn't get to do the big boats. Actually only got to do the rafts for 2 days because I'm blind in one eye, and that's a bad mix when you're trying to have depth perception to see how far it is to the raft dock. So
that
didn't last very long. I purposely took myself off of that before I killed somebody.
What did you like about Mansion?
Mansion is, well, that's kind of funny because as a kid I was afraid of Mansion. Mm-hmm. Sue and I grew up in a, I guess what you would just call a haunted house.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so going into Mansion was, I had a fear it was going to just be really too much for me to work. And it really was not. I enjoyed Mansion as the lead. It was always in my nature to explore. So I would explore all of Pirates. I know every nook and cranny of that building. So when I finally got to Work Mansion just a few months later, same thing. I'm up there exploring the top of the elevator shafts and the, you know, every inch of the show building and crawling under the track and the things that OSHA would look at now and go, no.
Yeah.
But yeah, talk about ghost stories though.
Ooh. Oh, tell us some.
Well, the weirdest one, I was a lead in that day, and I'm down sitting in the service area under, well, I guess between load and unload, that's the best way to put it. And I get a call that a guest had lost something somewhere in the attraction. They didn't know where it had fallen out. It was a purse or a wallet or something. I don't remember exactly. So we were walking them down at the time, which meant that we had somebody working the load and unload area. And I'm sorry, the load one and load two area, which would be the first part of the belt and the end of the belt at load. The load two person would go back to the elevator, take it up, grab the next group, come down, and then load them. We would just call them walking them down. It's when it's really quiet. So there would be big gaps of guests that made it easy for me to just take a flashlight in and just kind of follow the last group through and try to find something. Right. So anyway, I grab my remote to stop the ride with. I grab the walkie-talkie and give the other one to the load one person, and I grab my flashlight and I start out into the ride, which I'd walked through with the lights on, the lights off for years at this point. Mm-hmm. I'm walking through and I get to the ballroom and I'm still looking for something. And I hear somebody running on the wooden portion of the walkway, which is when you come out of the ballroom, there's a 90 degree turn. Mm-hmm. And then you enter the, what's now the bride's, boudoir, I guess it was the attic scene at the time, but it goes from concrete, carpeted concrete, to wooden floor. So you can hear somebody walking or running on it. And so I, right as I'm coming to the corner of the wall where it would turn and go to the left, I hear somebody running. So I turn on my flashlight and put it on the walkway. So if it was a cast member, they'd see the light and know I'm there. Mm-hmm. I figured somebody running through, or if it was a guest, I would, you know, catch them running around the corner. Whatever it was, ran around the corner, hit me hard enough to spin me around halfway, and I could hear it still running on the carpet. Wow. And there was nothing there. Just a very cold something that hit me and spun me around. I ran the other way through the attic, down the ramp, and out the back door. Stood out there and shook for about 15 minutes and then walked all the way around the building across the railroad tracks and back into the mansion and sat at my desk and said, I am never going back in that ride by myself as long as I'm the lead.
Wow.
Yeah. There's dozens and dozens of stories that people have told me over the years and other things that have happened while I was in there. A good friend, you remember Rick West?
Oh, yeah, we've had him on. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You did. You had Rick on a while back. Well, Rick and I used to do a newsletter together for the company called the Disney Dispatch. Mm-hmm. That's what led him out to do the Break Zone and then Theme Park Adventure and all that.
Yeah. And,
I mean, I'm not saying I started Rick's career. Just saying we did something similar at the same time. So I've known Rick for years, going back to the 90s. Well, he was a cast member working with me at the mansion one night during a grad night. And so he was in what we would call working, I forgot what we called it, basically just security. He would have a remote and a walkie-talkie and a flashlight, and he would just wait and try to make sure kids weren't smoking, you know, or, you know, doing things they shouldn't be doing. Well, he calls me and said he had heard something making a noise in the seance circle. So I go back in there with him, and we are standing up behind the vehicles as they're going around in front of Madame Leota, and we can hear something under the track going bing, 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 like around the track. Mm-hmm. So we go around down the stairs, and we're standing now down on the ground level looking up at the track, and we hear it again. And I'm sitting there trying to figure out, is it a loose piece of metal? Is it a bad road wheel? You know, what's making this noise? And it's about 2 seconds right on cue, it goes bing, 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 bing the other direction. Like somebody was taking a piece of wood and hitting the bottom of each support. And both of us just looked at each other and said, nope, we're out of here. He also was that same, I don't know, it was the same night or one of the other nights when he was working in there at the top of the stairway when you first start into the attraction. There's a little closet looking area with a curtain in front of it. Well, it just, if you go in that, there's a ladder that goes up and goes up to the catwalks. So he's in there and just peeking out, and he was standing there and he said he felt somebody put their hand on his right shoulder, and he thought somebody was playing with him. And of course there's nobody there.
Yeah.
He ran back down to service and explained to me why he was not going back in the attraction for a while.
I've heard stories in Pirates too, similar stories.
Yeah, Pirates was a little odd feel in the transition tunnel. But if you want to call it the haunted house central of Pirates, it was boat storage.
Yeah.
But boat storage just felt not even depressing. It almost felt evil. I don't know how to say it. It just, you didn't want to be down there. So it was, I don't know if any specific stories down there, but I don't know. Sue, did you ever have any things that you had happen in any of the areas over in Critter Country?
I wasn't there long enough for that, for those kinds of stories. I was only in Critter Country for that one summer. My next position wasn't until a couple of years later when I went back and worked at DCA over at the Hyperion Theater. And we had heard that there were some ghost stories. I never experienced anything firsthand.
Oh, it's a good theater without ghosts.
I mean, come on. Theaters are always haunted, so.
Yeah.
You got to have those.
Yeah, so he was an assistant stage manager for the Aladdin show.
Aladdin, a musical, spectacular.
Oh, nice.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I don't think we've gotten a lot of description of what it was like to work in the restaurants there, like at, how often would you get somebody coming to the Rare Bar or the Mile Long Bar and saying, they'd want some alcohol?
Oh my gosh. Literally every day.
Oh, really?
Literally every day. It was, we didn't get it at Hungry Bear so often, but all the time at Rare Bar, just because it has the name bar in it.
False advertising.
Yeah, exactly. And the closest I don't even know if we had root beer. Like, we got nothing to offer you. I'm so sorry. Would you like a Biggie shaped pretzel?
Yeah.
Here's the map to get to Sergeant Preston's at the hotel.
Yeah. Seriously, that was the only answer at the time.
Wow. Immediate membership applications for Club 33.
You know? Yeah, there you go. Yeah. For just a small fee.
Oh my heaven. We're talking about doing an upcoming episode called Stupid Guest Tricks or something similar to that.
Basically. I think we're just going to call it How to Guest.
How to Guest. That's what it was. Yeah.
Less offensive than say, because if people aren't familiar with like David Letterman, they might not, what do you mean?
Exactly.
Stupid guest tricks? That's true. But yeah, the some of the things that you catch people doing in the park, you cannot rationalize what is going through their heads. I caught a gentleman, very proper looking Japanese tourist gentleman, behind a construction wall with his pants down, just letting it go in the bushes. It's like, restroom it, here this way, follow.
Yeah, we would get that in custodial. It's,
code H.
People don't know where the nearest restroom is, and before they can ask, they're going.
Well, I understand if you're a kid,
you
don't have a way of articulating it, but I just don't. I was working in the tower at Indy one time when a lady comes running in to the tower. In fact, I don't know if it's locked anymore still. It's in the exit hall, basically, to get in the tower at Indy. Oh, yeah. And she goes, I have got to go to the bathroom, and just dropped her drawers and sat down on the trash can and let it go. ma'am.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was
have a magical day.
Yeah. I remember somebody having to do a cleanup in there. I don't know if it was the same incident, but
it may have been, yeah. I'm sure it happened more than once. People just try to find the first open door to think, hope it's a restroom.
Yeah, it's like there's a restroom immediately down the stairs, you know. Yeah. Because they don't know how, I mean, yeah, you see the wait times and everything, but they really didn't know just how far they'd be going in Indy, you know. And they're thinking the nearest restroom is, you know, back at the Adventureland entrance or New Orleans Square.
Yeah. Yeah, Indy was good in that it had the cast member restroom, which they finally did, but you know, guests use right there by the station. But mm-hmm. the nice thing about the newer attractions being built in the national park, the Valley of Moara, mm-hmm. at Disney's Animal Kingdom, Flight of Passage actually has a restroom halfway through the queue.
Nice.
And it's brilliant. It was just one of those things that they learned from the long queues like Indy and the other ones like that, that they got to start doing that.
If only they did the same thing at Rise.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Rise of the Rise of the Resistance really needs a restroom halfway through. Get some water, goodness. I haven't talked this much since the Jungle Cruise. Welcome aboard the Leaky Tiki.
Yeah, let's talk about Jungle Cruise.
Let's do. I love the jungle. I'm a proud cast member that was a proud skipper on the world famous Jungle Cruise. I was Raging River Rod or Irrawaddy Roddy, depending on how I felt that day. One day I was Mr. Rogers. That didn't go over so well, the lead, but yeah, I did jungle for about 8 of the 9 years I was there. And can still do the entire spiel from scratch if I had to.
What was your favorite joke that you told?
Oh, heavens.
can you remember it?
Well, there were grad night jokes that I probably shouldn't repeat over the air that were funny.
we'll get classified into a different kind of podcast.
Yeah, yeah, we don't want to do that. But, goodness. I don't know that I've got a single joke that was my favorite. I just loved the whole spiel.
Yeah.
It was really a good time to even practice your improv. And I really do kind of blame the Jungle Cruise for my quirky sense of humor, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
Or as my sister calls it, annoyance, right?
I mean, you know, sometimes.
Yeah, okay. It's when I tell the same joke for the fifth time that, yeah.
But now his favorite part that you wish was there when you were there.
Oh, the backside of water.
No,
oh, 2H.
No.
Oh, I love that.
That is a good one. But the wrecked boat.
Oh, heavens. Yeah. I heard so many cast members and skippers even talking about how bad it was that they changed the jungle. Mm-hmm. But the usefulness of the characterizations that they had were outdated. They needed to do something. And the replacement that they did for the Headhunters area with the sunken boat with the monkeys that are pretending to be Jungle Cruise skippers. I about wet myself the first time I saw that. That's brilliant. It really is. And the addition in the lore of the SEA is even better.
The society, they did a pretty good job with that.
Yeah, the SEA tie-ins that they're now doing with the attractions.
Which we did an episode on that recently here.
Oh, did you? Oh, my gosh.
We're putting one together for a future episode as well. It's so fun.
Yeah, one of the things we talked about at the end of our last podcast was the idea of coming up with an SEA tour at Magic Kingdom where you actually go and start at the Skipper's Canteen in the SEA room, which is a secret room with at the restaurant, and mm-hmm. you're led by a member of the SEA to Jungle Cruise and to Thunder Mountain, and then have some spectacular end that, you know, we'll let WDI come up with that part. But bring out the entertainment department to do things with the SEA and actually build upon the myth that is there. I would really love to see a whole Disney film based on it sometime.
Hey, wait, maybe somewhere on the property at Walt Disney World, they could even like have this thing. They could like do some sort of little island that involves Merryweather Pleasure. And then they can have a club of some sort.
Hey, a place for adventurers. You know, I can see it now. There'd be a piano that would take requests, and there'd be talking masks, and to never sell.
Kungaloosh.
Yeah.
I don't know. Disney Plus series would be really good. I think you should do that.
Oh, that would be cool.
And then a making of the
like
series.
A mockumentary.
Yeah.
Oh my
style.
God.
That would be really cool.
That would be hysterical. Oh my gosh.
Well, we've already got Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy now as part of the Disney family now that they're doing the Canada movie. So bring them on over. Let them do a mockumentary.
Wait. There's a movie in Canada?
I know. Who knew?
Really? If you go during Food and Wine, it's not there. It's weird. Yeah.
that
poor Circle Vision Theater needs some help. Oh, man.
Well, do you have any fun stories from Jungle? Cast member pranks or stories.
Again, some that I have to be careful what I tell here.
Okay.
There was one time when on the old Candy Stripe boats, this is before the makeover. So this would have been with the thatched roof queue in 89 maybe or 88. Was coming around somewhere about, I think I was near the elephant pool, and I went to pull the gun early. I wasn't going to actually shoot something. I was going to make a joke about scaring off one of the elephants or something of that nature. And somehow as I pulled it out of the holster and raised it up, the hammer hit one of the metal rods, one of the crossbars, and it fired a blank, but close enough to the canopy that it blew a hole in the canopy. Looked like a little cigarette burn.
Oh boy.
So I come back into unload, and they're asking everybody, did you shoot accidentally? So, or did you shoot a single shot somewhere? And I'm like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. what's that little hole right there? Oh, I don't know, it looks like a cigarette hole, probably one of the machinists or something. I don't know.
Statute of limitations,
it's way beyond that now. Oh, but by the time I left Disney in 06, I was done with SoCal. I mean, I'm a proud Californian. I was born and raised in San Luis Obispo, and after 25 years in Southern Cal, I just had enough of the gas prices and the
traffic.
And I had moved like 7 times. I couldn't even tell you how many places I lived down there over the years, trying to find some place that felt like home. When I moved here to Missouri, I took a job in IT with Hirsch and Family Entertainment, working for their corporate IT department based at Silver Dollar City. So I worked with Silver Dollar City and all the Branson properties, Dollywood in Pigeon Forge, Snow Mountain Park in Atlanta, Wild Adventures in Valdosta, Georgia, a couple of aquariums, the Hirsch and properties, basically. And within just a few weeks, Sue was ready to move from Pennsylvania. So she moved out to Branson at the same time. 6 months later, my folks moved from Paso Robles, California to Branson. Then our older sister, Karen, moved to Branson. Snowballed. I think there's now 40 people that have moved out here since I moved here. That either are related to me or friends of our families.
You're like a trendsetter, I guess.
We call it the Tret Senders. Yeah.
There you go.
I've been to Silver Dollar City a few times.
The gorgeous park. There. It was just voted number one theme park. I just heard that. It was by,
I think it was TripAdvisor.
TripAdvisor, yeah.
Yeah.
When was the last time you were out here?
2003, I want to say.
Oh, wow. Okay. It's changed a
lot.
Changed a bit.
Yeah, I bet.
We've got some great new posters.
Oh, yeah. Fire in the Holes last year is this year. They're going finally retire it. And there's a big rumor that the new big building that's being built at the back of the park is a replacement for it. But I guess that remains to be seen.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Uh-huh. But the whole riverfront area is completely changed, been rebuilt from the ground up. They moved the cinnamon bread from the mill down to riverfront now.
Mm.
To its own store. If you're not familiar with Silver Dollar City, by the way, folks, it is a theme park in Branson, Missouri.
Yeah.
Gorgeous park. Come out and see us. I don't work there anymore.
Oh.
Wish I did. Now I'm in the, believe
what
it or
did
not,
you do? What did you do? Did you burn a hole in their Jungle Cruise?
No. I was their POS guy for point of sale, not piece of cellophane. No, yeah, I was their POS guy for about 9 years, and I think my time with any job seems to be 9 years. That's 9 years at Disneyland, 9 years at Hershen. So, and Sue, you were there in
at Silver Dollar,
yeah, with what, ticket sales or
ticket sales and group sales and merchandise for a while.
Yeah, nice. So we have a theme park family. Gamut. Yeah, our dad actually worked there for a while in merch. Our niece Shelby worked in entertainment down at Disneyland. Disney World Entertainment for a while. She's with Legoland now. So we're a theme park family. Still are.
Theme parks. Ah. Who needs them? Oh, wait a second.
we still spend every vacation, it seems like, either on a cruise or at a theme park. So yeah, it's a. It gets in your blood. It's one of those things that it's an industry that lives on entertainment and escapism. And once you've been doing it for any amount of time, you guys know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
You do it for any short amount of time and you just want to continue doing it. But pay wise and lifestyle wise, ours is just, it's a very difficult industry to actually make a living at.
Yeah. I got tired of working every holiday, the whole, we work while others play.
Yes.
I mean, it's a true story. I got real tired of that. So missing every family event, every holiday.
Oh, I remember a Thanksgiving that I worked at California Adventure and I had to leave San Luis Obispo to drive down to work. And so I'm three and a half, four-hour drive. I get down there and I'm knowing that our family is all together having dinner. And so I go to the DCA cafe for my lunch and they had just run out of turkey. And I came unglued. The poor cast member I apologized up and down. I was just like, how can you run out of turkey on Thanksgiving? Do you understand what we're giving up? Not realizing I'm talking to somebody who's in the same boat I am, but I just absolutely lost it. It was like the last holiday I worked, and I knew at that point, that's when I kind of started thinking, okay, I'm getting too old for this.
You really laid into him, and then you said, don't you know who I am? I'm Rick West, and darn it.
I've heard Rick say that, actually, so no.
No, Rick, that's a running joke with Rick, you know, for years, Rick and I have said, you know, if we ever act like that, we're going to say, you know, don't you know who I am? We're going to give someone, you know, the name of somebody else, you know.
It's funny. Rick, I took Rick to see his first snow 1 year. We were going up for the opening of Batman, I think it was, at Magic Mountain. And we were there for the press party and for the press opening. And between the two, he had never seen snow, so we drove up to, I think it was Mount Abel, up the hill towards Fraser Park, and he saw his first snow up there. I was like, hey,
wow,
cool. And then we also kind of ran across each other again at the opening of Goliath for the American Coaster Enthusiasts were there, so I was there as part of that, and he was there for the press. And the oddest thing occurred almost 10 years to the day. I was there with my brother Harold, and standing in front of Goliath was Rick West in the almost the exact same spot that I had seen him nearly 10 years to the day. And we stood there and talked for hours, I believe, after that. Poor Harold was like, can we go now? Yeah, he's quite a guy.
Yeah, you did a print newsletter, because you mentioned it, for cast members, right?
I did. What was that?
The Disney Dispatch, right?
That is correct. Yeah, I actually was at the time going to school at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo and going to work at Disneyland every week. And so I had a 226 mile commute each way, and I knew every road and back road between Southern California and the coast that existed, because I had taken it at least once. And so as an internship for my journalism degree, the West Side, John Storbeck and Garth Stever, who was a supervisor at the time, took me on as an intern, basically, to do this newsletter. I proposed it to them. They accepted it. And actually, it was a non-paid internship to start. So I started the newsletter called Disney Dispatch, and Rick helped me with it a bit. Katie Hanley helped me do some of the graphics work, a friend of Ken and I's, actually, from way back.
Yeah.
And hi, Kim, by the way. And it started just as a West Side Attractions newsletter. And John Storbeck, by the time that he saw about the fourth or fifth edition, is like, you know what, this needs to be park wide if we're, you know, going to continue this beyond the internship, which we're going to. We're going to let you do this and do a one shift a week, 8 hours a day to run it through. And like, great. So it lasted for about 3 years. And by the time it was done production, it was at Walt Disney Imagineering. It was at the studios.
Yeah.
It was at Walt Disney World at all four parks, and at the, their Company D. We actually had people at three parks. This is before Animal Kingdom. So, but yeah, we had people out there that helped us with some of the research and some of the stories and things. But yeah, it was a big deal for a short time. And then it got shut down due to an error I made with public relations and mentioned that Fantasmic was going to be built at Studios. I mentioned it before it was actually anywhere else, because I didn't think about it, thinking only cast members read this, until the Orlando Sentinel published it and labeled the Disney Dispatch as the official newsletter of Disneyland.
Uh-oh.
The Disney line came unglued, and guest relations wanted me fired.
So, I was going to say, didn't you guys have a whole drive-by shooting rivalry, you know, where the people from the Disneyland line would drive by and smash your computer?
Oh, the line hated me because I was unregulated. I was still a mouthpiece for the park. I mean, I was still, everything was paid for by Disney. Everything was pro Disney. I wasn't doing things like we talk about on podcast now. We're a little bit more honest with some of the things that we say, but you can't not, when you work for a company, any company, give out inside information like that to the public, even if nobody's going to read it, because this is long before the internet. And
well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. I really like the newsletter, because this is before, you know, there was no, like today, cast members have something they can log into called the Hub. Yeah. You know, we had nothing like that. And so, you know, you didn't have all these websites and social media. So, you know, I would pick up the line, the Disneyland line, every week, and I would always look for the dispatch whenever it would come out. And, you know, those were great to have.
I think the best part about it was when I got called by the Disney Archives, and they wanted me to make sure that I sent them every past copy and then every current copy as well. So I'm proud to say that something I created is part of the Disney Archives.
Yay.
I also created a Disney character, believe it or not, that was in an attraction.
Oh, really?
I did not get credit for, no. Shall I tell the story?
Yes.
Yes, please. Please do. Okay.
Back in 1989, 90, I don't remember the exact year, there was a contest that Walt Disney Imagineering put on called Sorcerer's Apprentice. And yes, the very first year, they were asking for people from Disneyland and Disney World to give them attractions ideas or show ideas or, you know, things that would go into a Disney park. You know, no budget, just give us whatever you can. So I put together a 40-page treatment script, basically, on an area called the Dark Woods. And it was going to be behind Big Thunder at Magic Kingdom and or behind Country Bear Jamboree. So kind of where Star Wars is now at Disneyland. And it was based on Washington Irving's Sleepy Hollow. So basically the Headless Horseman story. Uh-huh. And I gave him the attraction. I gave him all the animation. I gave him all the movements for the animation. I drew out a kind of rudimentary.
Actually, my friend Tom drew those for you.
No, the schematic for the building. Sue's uh-huh. friend Tom actually did. I commissioned him to draw a ride vehicle. And so I turned all of that in, and I was one of the 10 people from the company that got selected to be part of Sorcerer's Apprentice. Dave Durham, who was one of the creative managers at WDI, was the winner that year. And he actually just recently retired. So it did some good. It brought a lot of good talent into the coffers at WDI. I was not one of those.
Hey, Larry.
Right. Thank you. So anyway, I got off track. There's a big shock. Anyway, during my presentation, I had finished talking to these Imagineers that were there, and they were taking notes. And one of the ladies said, "Hey, are you working on any other projects? I like how you think." And I said, "Well, I'm working on this other one called Crazy Larry's Used Star Speeders. Basically, the idea is to take a coaster and drop it in where the old America Sings building is, Carousel Theater, and highly theme it to a runaway used rocket. And you would walk through the queue would be walking through the showroom and the car lot, and there'd be like a crashed Star Speeder 2000, you know, and stuff from Tron, or not Tron, from Black Hole, and all of the space movies that Disney had done at the time, basically. And I mentioned to them, this is right about the same time Roger Rabbit had come out at the movie, with Charles Fleischer doing the voice of Roger Rabbit. So I had this idea of this character called Crazy Larry that would be on the TV screens and everything as you're walking through, going, "Crazy Larry here. I'll eat a asteroid to get you in." What can, you know? Well, this is in roughly 1990. Fast forward to 1996. I'm working some overtime at Space Mountain at Magic Kingdom. And FedEx had just started a sponsorship. And so they had monitors in the queue at Disneyland and Magic Kingdom. And I had not seen this. I literally had not been trained on the attraction. So all I'm doing is grouper. So I'm sitting there grouping while this video is going on the screen behind me. And I hear Charles Fleischer going, "Crazy Larry here." Well, I had actually mentioned the fact that my suggestion for the character voice would be Charles Fleischer because of that. They not only used my idea and the name, they used the actor I suggested, which means Charles Fleischer actually owes me 10% for whatever he got paid for that.
Wow.
Yeah, so wow. I actually did create a character that was in a Disney attraction for a very short period.
Nice.
Yeah, cool.
Again, how do you prove these things? It actually did happen. I'm not making it up.
And you signed away every right to it before you ever told them a word.
But see, Crazy Larry is for it, though. Yeah. Crazy Larry is a member of the Society of Explorers and Adventures.
I believe it wouldn't surprise me.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Tell us a little bit about your podcast.
Yeah, our podcast is called The Epcotian Adventure. And that is based on a term that we sort of created because we love Epcot.
We thought.
Yeah. Well, we created it at the time. And Epcotian would be one who is from or identifies from Epcot. Right. So we are Epcotian. So Epcotian Adventure is the name of it. And we talk about all things Disney, but we are Epcot centered, as we like to say.
Ah, I get it. Yeah, it's. There's a spot underneath Spaceship Earth as you walk in on the right-hand side where three or four pieces of concrete come together. And we've decided that that point in space is our like 0000 spot. You know, that's like,
that's home.
That's home.
Oh.
And growing up with Disneyland as a background and working for Magic Kingdom for a bit. And in our podcast, that's the drinking game. Hey, Rod said he works on an attraction. Everybody drink. Yay. but Sue and I actually went to Epcot in 1983 before it was even a year old. It was September 83 when we first went out there, and we were both young. I was high school. Sue was still.
I was in fourth grade.
Fourth grade. And seeing Epcot for the first time just flipped a switch in both of us. It really had an impact more so than any other Disney park or any other theme park, even, I think, on the planet.
And so we've been there all throughout the years. We've enjoyed most of the changes that they've done, but we do like to talk about things that are no longer there, things that we miss. And comparatively to things that we enjoy there today. So it's a bit of a retrospective, and we rank a lot of things.
We just finished actually editing today the top 12 smells of Walt Disney World.
True.
I like that.
That'll be out in 2 weeks. So
and we did food and wine.
Yeah, we did food and wine last year.
No. Flower and Garden Festival.
Yeah.
So we did our own best of the fest for things that we tried and enjoyed, and we rate those by 1 out of 5, not a golf balls. So that's our ranking system.
Yeah, it just kind of started. Actually, the whole idea is another cast member friend of ours, Colin Christie. Hi, Colin, and hi, Becky, if you're listening, had the idea to start a podcast, and him and I were. They're still going to eventually start one. And it kind of, with Sue and I here together, we're like, well, let's put this stuff together and let's see what we can do. And so we kind of just put this together almost on a whim, and it was fun. And so we've been doing, we're on episode, we'll be recording episode 24 Sunday.
24?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we've been weekly since the end of January. Actually, the first one was on my birthday back in January.
Yep, they release every Monday.
Every Monday at 12:01 a.m.
Eventually, we'll be up to where you guys are.
Yeah. But and yeah, we do
anywhere weekly podcasts are found.
Everywhere, yeah.
Yeah, we're hosted through a site that actually drops it to, I think, 8 different locations, including YouTube and Audacity. No, I'm sorry, Audible.
All the places you find a podcast.
Okay.
Yeah. And then a few others have picked us up. So Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts all have us as well.
And are you on social media?
Yeah, you can also find us on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube as well.
Yeah, YouTube is still just audio only.
It's static, yeah.
Yeah, it's audio only still. We may eventually work our way into that, but...
Probably not.
I've got a great face for radio, so, you know...
Ken has that too.
I think Ken, yeah. That's I think I heard you say that actually. Big paper podcast. The older you get, the more you don't give a rat's tush what you look like anymore. So that said, we'll probably be doing podcasts for a while.
Yeah, well, and being the only girl present, let me just say it's a whole different game when you have to put makeup on and you have to figure out what your hair is doing. So yeah, we'll stick to podcasts.
Well, the nice thing is, and like you guys have done a lot of interviews with people whom you've had contact with that are in the industry and with WDI and Disney and other. We have some friends too. We actually did a podcast interview with Andy Hammer, who was an Imagineer that worked on the Hatbox Ghost at Disneyland. He was actually the set designer and actually did all of the colorization for that character.
He's a brilliant scenic artist and has gotten to paint some really cool things, but him getting to do the Hatbox Ghost was literally a dream come true for him.
Yeah, he was also worked with another Imagineer friend of mine, Rick Turner, at Disneyland Shanghai on Pirates, and actually did the treasure scene there as well. He was also a colorization person. I don't remember exactly what he said for
Mario at Universal
Osaka. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he's currently working on some stuff for Tokyo Disneyland, or Tokyo Disney Sea, I should say, for the new area. So
very good. Yeah. So everyone should go over and listen to your podcast and subscribe or follow or whatever they call it now.
Yeah,
we would love that because we're still starting out. We're still starting out slow, like, you know, like you do.
Yeah.
So we'd love any of the love you can give us.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on, both of you. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks again. It's great talking to you.
Wow, what an episode, Ken.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I've known Rod a long time, and I mean, I didn't know some of those things. So,
well, great stories.
One of the perks of doing this podcast is learning things I never knew. You know, that's
yeah.
And as you can tell, you know, they have a love for theme parks, and I think that really came through. Mm-hmm. And such wonderful stories to share. So, So if you know, after you're done listening to our podcasts, you can listen to theirs.
That's right. Right, as promised, when we receive a review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, I will read them. And we have a new one. It is titled Great Podcast, 5 stars, June 13th, 2023, from Fortnite God. And that's, everyone has these usernames or whatever they're called, pretty unique. Okay, let's read it. It says, enjoy learning about the behind the scenes of Disney. Nice break from my true crime podcast. My mom's company would close down for the nights. Miss those days. Thank you so much. Really appreciate every review that you leave. And if you, we would truly appreciate it if you, you know, left a review, wherever you listen, and they allow reviews, and, I'll read the ones that are on Apple just cause that's the one I use, but, and most people are more familiar with, we're also on Spotify and, I think Pandora. We're on a bunch of places. So you can go and Google Podcasts also. So listen where we're out there and subscribe and follow and whatever else. And Ken, do you have any closing remarks?
Well, we do alternate. So subscribe, and that way you will get the current events episode when it comes out next. And you just listen to us. You'll get your dose of Disneyland history and what's happening now. So we're the place to go for your Disneyland information.
That's right. And we'll talk with you next time.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.